What's up, guys? Welcome back to Culture Binge, the Wisecrack podcast, where we get all types involved in cultural zeitgeist to see what's going on. As always, I am Michael, joined by the Bernie Madoff of Crypto Art Investments, Alec, and the songbird of a generation, Serby. Alec and Serby, how are you all doing today?
Well, thank you. How are you?
Just fantastic. Feeling really energetic. Alec, how are you?
I'm great. A little taken off guard by the Bernie Madoff thing, but I'm liking it.
I mean, he was very successful for a time, so I'm comparing you to his successful period, not his incarcerated period. So at least have that. So we have a lot to get into today, as always. We're going to talk about digital art. We'll talk about innovations in dining and dashing. And we will talk about why one of the most important singer-songwriters of the generation is upset. But first, let's talk about why we are happy and sad at various levels. We'll do slaps and chaps. This is the part where we all share something that's really slapping for us the past couple weeks and something that's chapping our behinds. So, Serby, let's start with you. What are your slaps and chaps for this episode?
So, what slaps? The Undoing on HBO. I did not have high expectations going in, but I was pleasantly surprised. It was the kind of show where as soon as it ended, I wanted to start the next episode. I really liked seeing Hugh Grant on screen. The other thing that slaps is my best friend from business school is ready to date again. Her relationship ended last year, so she's ready to date again, and I'm super excited for her. I have a request for our viewers. If you have a Raya or Raya invitation, if you could please send that my way, because she's currently on all the dating apps and she's not having any.
What's Raya?
I mean this in the best way possible. Yeah. I don't think one of our listeners has a Raya invitation.
You don't.
What's I'm just going to say it.
We have a diverse audience.
No, but I don't mean about diversity. I mean, Raya is like the historically slightly more douchey influencer and C-list celebrity dating app that you have to be invited to go on. So it's if you want to have like a late night cuddle with John Mayer, you go on Raya and you hope for the best.
Save sex, John Mayer. So
yes,
I want her. So this is actually kind of a selfish request as well, because I want her to go on the app. So this way she can go on these dates and tell me what it's like. And then I can talk about it on Culture Binge.
Yeah, so, that's great content. So if you want good content.
Yeah. So if you could please send me culturebinge at wisecrack.co. an invitation or however it works. Please do that if you want to know what it's like to date on this exclusive dating app. What chaps? I watched the show Away on Netflix, and it's about a space crew that goes to Mars. And I really liked it. It's so great. It's the effects are really good. The stories are interesting. And I'm so sad to learn that the show was canceled and it's not coming back for a second season. And I'm gutted. So that's what chaps.
Sorry for your loss.
Thank you. Wow. I appreciate it.
Alec, how about you? Slaps and chaps. What do you got?
Oh, I just read this book that I thought was really interesting. It's called Disobey by Frederick Gross. He's a philosopherman.
Is that Gross, like G-R-O-S-Z?
Something like that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I think I know what that is.
But just talks about like the kind of obedience and obviously disobedience part of that through a lot of like sort of historical figures. And I thought it was really interesting.
That's fantastic.
As far as what chaps, nothing. The world is perfect, and I resent this segment.
Wow. Well, there's the prince of positivity, the opulent overlord of optimism, Alec, avoiding chaps once again. I'll do mine real quick. I kind of want to do two slaps, so maybe I will very quickly. They're related but opposite things. First slap, American Idol. Been watching it.
Wow.
Loving it. And it's a shock. You would not think that I would love that show. Here's why I love it. Because in these dark times, it's like a pure celebration of random ass people having creative talent and hope and joy. And it's the most I've ever cried in my life is just watching American Idol on Sundays. And also, I just like how nice they are, you know?
So
like,
there's no more Simon Cowell?
No, it's Lionel Richie, Luke Bryant, and Katy Perry. And I low key stan Katy Perry. She's just funny. She has these crazy outfits, and she's just really nice to people, and they seem to believe in them. And even when they tell them they're not going to make it, they're like, "Yo, like here's three things to work on. We still believe in you. This might not be the best for you right now, But I don't know. It's just kind of, it's a truly feel good show up until this point. Maybe it'll get into bad vibes once they get past the audition thing. And then just in terms of bad vibes watching, since I've watched it, I've still been thinking about Adam Curtis's recent documentary, Can't Get You Out of My Head, which you can find online, which is basically about like why we're all screwed and how deeply we're screwed. So maybe you watch the Adam Curtis thing, then watch American Idol if you need to feel better about it. For Chaps, I'll just say this really quickly. I was really annoyed by the online discourse about one line in WandaVision that took over the internet recently. And the reason I didn't like it is because it was sort of like a young person who's an aspiring screenwriter being like, I really like this line. It was great. And all these jaded old professional screenwriters being like, fuck you, idiot. And I just didn't like it. I feel like it was a bad vibe. And I feel like everyone's having a bad year. And I get it. But I feel like the vibes are getting a little too froggy and people should chill out a little bit.
The line was,
I know it's kind of vague.
What is grief but love persevering? And they're like, this is the greatest line ever written, which I don't think most of us agree, but did we have to dunk on person?
Definitely not. But I think there's a writer, comedian, a very brilliant person, Heather Ann Campbell, who I'm a huge fan of, who tweeted something to the effect of like, the line was fine. You all are being ridiculous.
Are you able to share what the line is or no?
Oh, Alec just said it.
What is
grief but love persevering? Yeah.
Oh, well, that's not but
it's
bad.
It's in a goddamn superhero show on Disney Plus. It's a fine line.
Yeah.
But the most annoying thing about it was people roasting the person who said it was good. And a lot of them were professional screenwriters. And it's like, what are you all talking about? That is like the stuff that gets made is corny like that. None of you are freaking new wave French filmmakers who are producing abstract art on celluloid. Like the industry is a market and commercial driven thing where a lot of stuff sucks. Emily in Paris rules the world.
Oh, yeah.
So who are you all to act like, you know, the people who are writing for TV shows in Hollywood are like the scribes of a generation. Just so corny. Bad vibes. Didn't like it.
Yes, agreed.
I got real negative and I apologize for that. Watch American Idol on ABC Sunday nights. 8 p.m. Pacific time. Okay, well, those are our slaps and chaps. Thanks for doing those, even if Alec is going to continue to protest against chaps, which is his right to do. Before we get into our topics, just a reminder, subscribe, rate, review this podcast. It would be meaningful to us, and it'd be especially meaningful to us if after you give us a 5-star rating on whatever platform you choose to rate us on, I don't know, you maybe tell us which film genre we would all be. Maybe you want to say that Alec has the vibe of like a late 80s cyberpunk movie. Maybe you want to say Serby's vibe is sort of like a mystery thriller. Maybe I am, I don't know,
Disney.
Like a student film someone found in a trash can. Or Disney.
Yeah. But either way. Burns is specifically like the genre of 50-year-old Disney movies that are very problematic. That's.
I think my vibe would be problematic Disney movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some with involves in steamboats and lots of like Southern songs sung awkwardly and with choruses of birds singing them. So once again, just rate, review, let us know what film genre you are. We'd really appreciate that. And if you do that, we'll read some of them on here. So that's always fun. But for our first topic, and everyone, I barely understand what he's going to get into here. We'll see if you understand this. Alec is going to tell us about some recent Grimes-based drama around crypto-based digital art.
I don't think it's drama, but yeah.
News.
What?
Okay, so it's not drama. It's some news. Some current events, some happenings around crypto art.
Yeah, so there's these things called NFTs. They stand for non-fungible tokens. We'll sort of explain that in a second. But the basic premise is that if you have a one-of-a-kind art piece in real life, you know, like a Van Gogh or something, you can spend millions of dollars to buy it and be the only person that has that. Sure, there might be replications, forgeries, etc., but you've got the real shit. So some people decided that they need that for digital things that have no scarcity. Like, of course, there's, you know, a million different replications of the same GIF, whatever you want to call it. So a non-fungible token is a way to sort of, through blockchain and cryptocurrency, ascribe like a singular value non-fungible, which means not sort of tradable, interchangeable, et cetera, to a piece of digital art. So if any of you are familiar with the Nyan Cat, which is the sort of cat animation with like a Pop-Tart and a rainbow coming out of it, an artist sold one of those for a ton of money. Grimes is doing them. Lots of people are selling these things for tens of thousands of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars. So before I move on, basic premise, it's a one-of-kind digital art piece. Are we all on board so far?
Yes.
Why can't I click Shift-Command-4 and just take a screenshot of this and then share it?
You can, but there won't be something on the sort of blockchain ledger saying that it's yours, you know? It's okay, like a certificate of authenticity that you get with your limited edition Michael Jordan baseball cards.
So like when Martin Shkreli bought that one-of-a-kind Wu-Tang Clan album, even if someone then ripped that to the internet, he would still have that original one-of-a-kind copy.
Well, yeah, he has a physical copy, so it's a way to replicate. Yeah. I mean, the thing about all this stuff is it's scarcity. When you have a physical object, it's easy to say, I have the one and the original.
It's a way to have digital scarcity.
Yeah, a way to have digital scarcity. So specifically, there's a insider article about Grimes. The article reads, over the past few weeks, sales of non-fungible tokens or NFTs have taken off. NFTs, which operate as a unique type of digital asset or token, have in some instances sold for millions of dollars a piece, contributing to a crypto art market that's valued at over $100 million. Grimes had 10 NFTs that brought in over $5.8 million in under 20 minutes. This is Grimes, pop artist, also married to Elon Musk. I think maybe the consensus is Grimes is cool and Elon Musk is less cool, or is Grimes not also cool?
I would say Grimes was really cool and she's been less cool, not because she's married to Elon Musk, because we can't blame people for their partner's whackness, but a lot of her takes and views have gotten very whack since she's been the partner of Elon Musk.
Yeah, and I think that flows nicely into this next bullet I have from this article, which is one piece, an image that depicts a baby guarding Mars. This is artwork done by Grimes, has garnered significant attention, trading at over $300,000 in under 10 minutes. It's called Newborn 2 NFT, has already been relisted after that one auction at $2.5 million. There's another piece called War Nymph, appears as a baby to represent, and this is a quote. Yeah, we've got some Grimes art. And the art is, I mean, I can't make this kind of art. I'm not gonna knock the artistry behind it, but I feel like in terms of, is this good art?
I'll knock it. This is stupid.
Yeah. Like, I think it's a thing where like the artistry or like the technical part of it is cool and like it looks pretty, but at the same time, the art of it is dumb. So War Nymph, it's a state of, this is a quote, a state of infancy where she sheds her old skin of corruption, the site says, adding that she battles the destructive forces of obsolete ideas and systemic decay that threaten the future. Get it? It's about Elon Musk's struggles because he's trying to burn the old system and then send us all to Mars in some libertarian colony. But anyway, that's the sort of War Nymph series. Grimes is obviously not the only one. In February, the digital comic artist Chris Torrey sold an NFT of his Nyan Cat for nearly $600,000. We also, Joy, can we put on, there's the Pepe.
Oh, no, it's Pepe art.
Well, so the original artist who made Pepe, sold for a ton of money. It's a Homer Simpson Pepified. And again, I just want to remind everyone, the original artist of Pepe is not a bad person. It was appropriated by Nazis. And then he tried to fight the Nazis. And there's a documentary. I haven't seen it. I've heard it's very good. But that's what's going on with NFTs. What I find interesting is that I would say, even in the real world, you have a physical copy or you're a sneakerhead. You're trying to get, like, it's all fake. It's all, you know, supply and demand and human psychology. There's no like inherent reason that like gold should be valued what it is, but this is more fake in a way that makes me feel deeply uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. I don't like this.
I like, what if it. I told, I just want to get involved in it. Like it? I want to sell something.
Yeah.
Okay. So you don't like it as art. You like it because you think it'd be dank to have one of these commodities that you could make some bank off of.
100%, yeah.
Yeah, that's, I mean, listen, like, if I could just have a file and I sell the file and make a bunch of money, what an easy way to, as the ancients would say, secure the bag. But I just think, like, I would rather spend thousands of dollars to just pay for, like, a really good album or something made by a musical artist rather than a weird digital thing of a baby throwing a spear at the earth to defend the ideas of Elon Musk.
But here's a question. Aren't you kind of into sneakerhead / hype stuff? Like limited edition.
Hype. Yes, I do enjoy a good limited edition sneaker.
In terms of, like, obviously Nike could make as many of this kind of sneaker, but they arbitrarily, like, we're only going to make 100 to drive the price up. The scarcity in both cases is fake. What makes it is. I'm not knocking you. I just want to know, like,
well, I mean, first of all, let's just say it. Nike, just a good company. It's family owned. It's they produce things in a way that's ethical, and you feel good about yourself when you buy stuff from there, or you have cognitive dissonance and you convince yourself it's okay, even though you're aware that, like, a Malaysian child is probably making your shoes. But I guess the difference would be there's still something, like, functional about a shoe. So even if you're getting limited, I mean, because I'm not the type of person that, like, puts things in a case and never wears them, even with limited edition things. I think they're fun to wear. Because then occasionally someone working at, like, a cool coffee shop who's younger than you might say, like, cool shoes. And you're like, hey, you've still got it, kid. but I don't know. And I guess they're, like, tied into culture in a certain way. But hey, maybe I'm just convincing myself that there's a difference where there is none. But for me, at an intuitive level, a digital piece of blockchain certifiable art feels different than a physical good.
I agree. Yeah. I don't know how you, like, do you use that as, like, your desktop background? Like, how do you look at it? You just open
the file? I think some people can like, obviously you can display in whatever way you want, but you could, for instance, have, like, a little LCD screen, or I'm just going to call it, like, put a fucking iPad on your wall and, like, have it as an art piece.
There's a Samsung model TV that, like, the whole thing about it is it looks like an art frame. So I guess you could put it on your Samsung, but then it's just, like, it's just going to waste time until you watch another episode of Stanley Tucci searching for Italy on CNN.
Well, I know, like, Walmart, or they used to have those sort of digital picture frames where you could put in a USB drive and it would, like, scroll through them. So anyway, get a $20 digital picture frame and then put your $60,000 Nyan Cat on it. Or your,
I just don't know, if I'm at someone's house and they're like, hey, here's this cool NFT, whatever you call it, on their screen. And I think to myself, oh, cool, I also just looked that image up and I have it on my screen. And they're like, but technically it's mine. And I'm like, cool, but technically I'm looking at the same thing.
Yeah, well,
I think that's where I don't get it. Whereas if someone has, like, a Rothko in their house, I can get a printing of a Rothko, but they're going to have the version of the painting that our guy Mark was, like, physically touching and working on that represents the materiality of the artistic creation and not just a reproduction of that thing. So it almost feels like the original itself is the reproduction.
Yeah, but so I agree with you in that it feels wrong and it feels bad, but I'm, like, almost challenging ourselves because, again, with, like, the original painting, what if you just had a really convincing forgery?
Yeah.
And, like, does it at the, like, if you've convinced yourself the forgery is real, does it matter? Or if your friend has a real and you have a forgery, what's the, to the, this is the same thing with diamonds, right? You can't tell the difference between a man-made diamond. So the diamond industry will make up ways to be like, you can totally tell the difference because we put this laser etching that it's a real and not a man-made diamond. But the point at which, like, you can't feasibly tell, you know, obviously there's a difference between a mass manufactured print of a Picasso and, like, a compelling forgery, you know?
Well, is the point here that just everything boils down to the stories we tell ourselves about ourselves and the things we consume? And once we dig a little deeper, we see that our entire social existence is just a bunch of interwoven false narratives.
Oh, yes. I think you nailed it.
I feel like I'm surrounded by technology all the time. Like, I'm constantly looking at a screen all day for work. I have my phone. I have a television. The last thing I want is another screen in my face, like shifting.
Yeah.
Pictures and stuff. Like, I don't need that. I don't know why. But I'm not in, I don't know. I feel like it's a very interesting idea for a very niche group of art enthusiasts.
Any final thoughts on crypto art? This has been very interesting. I feel like we've all learned a lot here. Wow.
Oh, and sorry. No.
Wow. I asked y'all if you felt me and the crowd left me stranded. Okay, well, let's move on. Let's start with this, okay? Have either of y'all ever dined and dashed in your lives? And note that anything you say on a podcast is not usable for evidence in court.
No.
So that's the law. No dine and dash? Never. Al, have you ever dined and dashed?
I don't think so. I think it might have been suggested by my friends once. I was like, no, we're not doing that.
Yeah. Okay, either have I. I think the closest I've gotten was getting food from a place that had a hot bar and just eating it and then leaving.
So
you know what I mean? So, like, I dined and didn't pay, but it wasn't like a restaurant.
Well, like, nobody served you.
No. So I basically just stole food inside of an upscale grocery store.
Oh, yeah, that doesn't count. Like,
yeah. And before we get into this, the reason dining and dashing is bad is because you're screwing over an individual employee who works off their tables and tips and in some cases might have to pay for a customer that screws them over. So never dine and dash. But one of the weirdest things that has happened in the past year in the restaurant industry, and we've talked about sort of changes in the restaurant industry and food consumption and food delivery quite a few times over the past year. But this is a story that kind of bummed me out. And it's about a new form of dining and dashing that's taking place that's actually led to one of the most popular restaurants in Los Angeles to shut down. So yes, the restaurant in question is a place called Spoon by H, and it's in the Fairfax District of Los Angeles, and it's a family-owned Korean restaurant that started as kind of like a dessert and sandwich cafe, eventually started making larger dishes and noodle soups, was still a pretty small thing, and then very famous chef David Chang of the Momofuku restaurant group said it was his favorite restaurant in like Los Angeles or something. All of a sudden, you know, place goes through the roof, gets very popular. Now, they have been managing to stay open during the pandemic by making these like large boxes with a bunch of different stuff in them, different types of like meat, pickled vegetables, rice dishes. They're very good. I had one for lunch one day. But what started happening is people started putting in very massive orders, picking them up, and then disputing the charges with the company Tok that they do their orders through. So Tok is one of these companies that restaurants use to get orders for meals right now. One of the orders that kind of set them back the most was one for, it was worth $728.76. Someone put this order in. Someone came and picked it up. They didn't leave vehicle information on their order, which is a standard thing. The customer showed up. The owner was like, let me help you take it to your car, and said the person acted kind of weird, but not too weird. She brought it to this customer's van, felt like she was just being a nice person and helping out a customer. And then within like a day or two, she got an alert that the charge was being contested. And eventually the money all got put on her, the owner of this small business. So rather than making almost $800, they lost both the cost of food and labor and the $800 that the customer contested. And this kept happening to this particular restaurant. And in most cases, the service sided with the consumer or the scamming consumer over the business. Now, some of the reasons this has been happening, I guess, more are that, you know, when people are taking orders digitally or by the phone, they're just taking your credit card number. They're not matching up your credit card with an ID or a person or anything like that. So it's been a mix of people both using scam credit cards. They make an order on the scam credit card. When the owner of the actual credit card files for the fraud, the restaurant kind of gets screwed in that case because they don't get that money. Or it's people using their own card or a scam card and then disputing the things. So restaurants don't have to do that. There's some other instances, and there's an article about this in the LA Times from a week ago. There's also an article on Eater about this thing you could look up if you wanted to. But it's happened in a bunch of other places. There's a butcher shop in Los Angeles that had some orders for over $1,000 that they said at the time didn't seem too weird because a lot of private chefs will sometimes call the butcher shop and put in these big orders. But one person put in an order for $600 of meat over the phone. The next week did $1,300 of meat over the phone. Then they were both disputed. So we're talking $2,000. And this isn't an industry that, if you've been keeping up with this, is truly, it's not dramatic to say, hanging on by the thinnest of threads. You know, the restaurant industry is one that has horrible margins when the world is great and the economy is booming. In these times, it's been a lot of very small teams doing their best just to keep the lights on and pay their employees. So I don't know. It's a thing that kind of shocked me to hear this was a thing. Bums me out that people are taking advantage of restaurants during struggling time. Now, you might be saying, Michael, didn't you just tell us a story about you eating food from a place and not paying for it? It was a chain business that screws over their employees. They're fine. Okay? They're fine.
I'm just going to assume it was Whole Foods.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say who. I'm going to say an evil person owns the place, so they're just fine. An evil person looks like Lex Luthor, has a shaved head, is based in Seattle, recently went through a big divorce. Their ex-partner got the biggest settlement in history, but I don't know. Maybe it's Whole Foods, maybe it wasn't. But very much bums me out to hear this is happening, and kind of like scary that it's setting a precedent that you can scam people. And you know, in some of these instances too, the woman who runs this place, Spoon by H in Los Angeles, said she started taking pictures of every order before she gave it to the customer. And in a lot of instances, the customer would leave and immediately file a thing that said, not all of my items were there. And she would have like photo evidence to be like, no, they were. And she said in those cases, people would say, oh, never mind, I found it in my car. But it just made it very apparent that people were taking advantage of a fragile restaurant industry to fuck them over. It bums me out. Any thoughts on this new era of dining and dashing?
It's really upsetting to me.
Yeah.
I obviously it's awful. I'm kind of curious in the economics of these platforms. Like, it doesn't sound like they were using a delivery service, but whether it's Uber Eats or DoorDash or Seamless. Mm-hmm. You know, as a person who's not dine dashing, I've had problems with like refunds and stuff. And what you're saying is it seems like, well, I'm confused about why the business had to pay. Like, I could understand if they were out $800 worth of food, but they also had to pay $800. That's what I don't understand.
Yeah, yeah. So with this business, sorry, with Tock, if I understand this correctly, you know, the customer paid this money, then they filed a dispute for the charges. And then wait, maybe I said this wrong. So
they just didn't, they just like got and then lost $800, but they just lost, I'm assuming, the food and the labor attached, right?
Yeah. So, okay. So here's like from the article on it. Yeah. So it says in this, in January, Tock let her know that she had lost her appeal and that she was responsible for the $728.76.
So it probably was deposited in her account and now she has to give it back.
Uh-oh.
I think it just means that she had to refund it. But also, for instance, if they were taking a cut out of it, did they also have to repay the cut? These are all questions. If you work in a restaurant, I want to know. Because from my perspective, not dying dashing, but I've had with a delivery service that I don't want to promote and want to stop using altogether. Just like a ton of problems of like food getting picked up and never getting there. So I've gotten like all these refunds and credits, but I think it's the service's fault, but I also suspect the restaurant might be paying for this, the fuck ups of like the delivery people. And that would make me feel even shittier.
Well, yeah. In the same LA Times article, there's some examples from some businesses that use Postmates and DoorDash. And in those instances, someone said that on Postmates, they have been able to get reimbursed. The example here is like on a Postmates order, a customer requested a full refund for a restaurant's dish because they said it was the wrong size, but the restaurant only serves the dish in a single size. So the restaurant owner was able to send a photo to Postmates, explain the sizing, and was reimbursed. So in some of the delivery services, it sounds like those owners have had better luck getting those things. But it seems like even in the instances where they're using delivery services that are, I guess, a little more amenable to restaurants, the restaurant owners are having to go through all these extra layers of effort to document everything with photos just to be ready to defend themselves, because that's how much these things are coming up. And in some instances as well, when they freeze the charge, days or weeks might go by where a restaurant doesn't have access to the money they should have been paid for the dish in question. And from the article in the LA Times, at least, one of the commonalities is it happens a lot on really large orders. So I think the point is as well, if you're running a struggling restaurant, that $1,000 you're out might be a really big deal if that's frozen for a week or two.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it seems like in the case that I'm thinking, which again, well, two things. I think it's probably worse because people feel like maybe, not in this case because they were picking it up and then charging it back, but I feel with Seamless, DoorDash, et cetera, there might be an added component of like, I don't actually have to see a person and I feel like I'm scamming DoorDash when in reality they might be scamming somebody else, depending on the policies of the company, whatever. But also with the delivery thing, yeah, I don't know. It's just all so fucked up. And these companies, I've been refunded so much from one delivery service because nobody came to pick up the order. I'm like, they would have kicked me off if they were paying for it. The restaurant must be making the food, yeah, throwing it out, which also makes me feel awful, which is why I don't want to use the service.
I mean, it does feel like the delivery services are in the best position because a lot of the problems can be put onto either the delivery drivers or the restaurants themselves.
Yeah.
And it seems like that's, and I don't understand the full legality of this, but I know in terms of the delivery services treating everyone involved as like private contractors and treating themselves as simply a platform, mm-hmm, for the transaction rather than a business, it seems like that gives them a legal liability such that they're not on the hook for any of this, so that the people getting screwed over are underpaid drivers and struggling restaurants rather than the billion-dollar funded Silicon Valley corporations that created the platforms.
That, yeah, makes me sad too, because recently I've been ordering most of my orders from either Instacart or Whole Foods have had some kind of a problem. Like, for example, I ordered flowers from Whole Foods, and when I opened the flowers up, they were all a lot of the like rosebuds were like cut off the stems. And so I was like, how did that happen? Yeah. So it seems like maybe some kid maybe like ripped them off or whatever. And so when I like said there was a problem with the product after I did it, I thought, oh no, does the driver get in trouble for that? Like, are they going to get penalized or does the money just get refunded from Whole Foods? So same thing with Instacart. I cut apples and all the apples were rotten inside. So is the driver, like when I say the quality is bad, does the driver get penalized or is it the like Instacart? So if you work at one of those places, so now I just haven't been disputing anything because I don't know who gets in trouble and I don't want the delivery person to get in trouble. So I just throw everything away.
Yeah. And that's a rough position to be in as like, let's call it an ethical consumer who doesn't want to screw over, you know, a delivery driver or a business owner or whatever. Yeah, I guess it can lead to situations like that where maybe then you don't want to complain because you don't want to screw someone over, but then it's like, whose fault is it? And then if we're not complaining or, you know, because of that worry, then Bezos and co. are good to go. It's just a big bummer. The one positive angle on the story in Los Angeles is the restaurant Spoon by H. Someone did set up a GoFundMe for them. They didn't set it up themselves and raised $50,000 in like a week because they were a beloved restaurant. So they might, I guess, try to reopen. But as of a week ago, they officially closed down because they were unsustainable with all the disputed charges that were happening. But I don't know if anyone who's listening to this is a scammer. Don't do that type of scam. You know, scam a major corporation, steal food from a big business. Just make sure you're not screwing over local businesses that are trying their best, you know?
Yeah.
So disappointing.
Or don't do any crimes. I don't know.
Yeah, crime is, we don't stand for crime.
Yeah, but is it a crime if you're just trying to eat? Isn't that what Les Miserables is about?
Yeah.
Which I've never seen nor read? Okay. All I know about it is memes involving Anne Hathaway.
If you do that, you're not a nice person. If you're listening to this and you've done something like this, you should have higher standards for yourself and don't be unkind that way.
Yeah. Well, and it brings up the question too of would people do things like this if they had to look people in the eyes when they did it? You know, do all these layers of digital distance make it easier for us to act like sociopaths?
Yes.
Because the people don't seem real. It's just an app. Yeah.
Yeah. Some people would still be doing it, but more people are going to do it because they don't. I mean, like, same thing when you steal a bunch of credit cards, you're not thinking about all the people. And to be honest, like my credit card's been stolen. It's been fine. So whoever stole my credit card, I don't mind.
Oh, so I have an unrelated story. It's just really embarrassing. I have to share it. So my credit card information was compromised during like a big hack at a big store. So my credit card company kept sending me new credit cards like every month or so to prevent like, I don't know, fraud or whatever. So I would be at a restaurant with friends or whoever, and my credit card kept getting declined. And like after the third time with the same person, the guy was like, are you having credit issues? Like, are you in a financial bind?
Oh, the card decline thing. Knock on wood, that hasn't happened to me in a while. But gosh, when I was in my mid-20s, it was always that constant fear sometimes of like just giving someone a card and being like, I hope this works. Not because it was hacked, because I was broke. That's horrible. Okay, so stop here by saying scam ethically. Don't be a dick and do stuff like this. Don't dine and dash in any way, shape, or form. It's not good. It's screwing over local businesses. It's bumming us out. Speaking of people who are bummed out, who are pissed, who feel like injustice has been done to them, Survey, tell us why Taylor Swift is upset.
Oh, Taylor Swift. Okay, so first, let me give you some context. There's a new show on Netflix called Ginny in Georgia. It's about a woman and her teenage kids who moved to a new town, and the mom is a bit immature, and there's quite a bit of mother-daughter tension. Basically, it's like a lamer version of Gilmore Girls, if anybody has seen that. And there's...
If anybody has seen that, yes, we've seen Gilmore Girls.
Anyway, there's been a lot of buzz about the show, and it's currently the top viewed show on Netflix right now. And it the show probably would have like faded into obscurity if a tweet wasn't sent yesterday. And the tweet in question was sent by Taylor Swift, who said the following. "Hey, Ginny in Georgia. 2010 called and it wants its lazy, deeply sexist joke back. How about we stop degrading hardworking women by defining this horse shit as funny? Also, Netflix, after Miss Americana, this outfit doesn't look cute on you. Happy Women's History Month, I guess." And Miss Americana is a Taylor Swift documentary that was released on Netflix about a year ago. And she also included a broken heart emoji. So she tweeted this in response to a joke that was said. And the scene, so let me set the stage. So the mother just found out that the daughter is sexually active. The daughter, I think, is like 15. And at one point during this argument, the daughter says, "What do you care? You go through men faster than Taylor Swift." So this Taylor Swift tweet has set off a firestorm of reaction. So, on one side, we have all of her fans who are bombarding the Netflix Twitter account with angry messages. Every tweet the company says or company sends out about, you know, whatever, any marketing promotional thing they have going on, the Taylor Swift fans will go and all the replies are about Taylor Swift. The actors in the show are receiving negative comments. The young actress who said the joke is particularly being targeted on Instagram. And a lot of publications are debating the merits of the joke and whether Taylor Swift was right in feeling upset. And so this is the line of thinking that I've seen emerging, the one where people are finding Taylor Swift's reaction a bit hypocritical. And before I start, so this way no Taylor Swift fans come after me, I'm not saying Taylor Swift is wrong in feeling upset, but the reason why people feel like her reaction is a bit strange is that she's made a career as a singer-songwriter who puts her personal life at the forefront of her music. So one of the prominent ways she writes songs is that she talks about her relationships. She talks about how many men she's dated or not how many men, excuse me, how her relationships have not worked out. And in one of her songs, she even says, "I have a long list of ex-lovers." And she talks about these relationships in her music and in interviews. So the argument that these people feel is that the writers on the show are merely repeating what she's already said herself. And I think the joke is lame, and I think it's kind of a lazy attempt at humor. I think resorting to the storyline of a woman who dates around is kind of a slut. Like, I think that's, like, we're done with that kind of joke now. Mm-hmm. But I do find it interesting that people feel like she has relinquished her right to feel offended just because she has incorporated her dating history as part of her narrative. And I started to think about that, like the idea of forfeiting our right to be offended in situations just because of how we've presented ourselves in the past or some of the things, so our like our personal history. So anyway, what do you think?
I think forfeiture of your ability to be pissed at things is maybe the wrong framework, but what I think is, well, here's a question about the joke. whether it's a good or bad joke, is it a joke like, haha, Taylor Swift is like a slut? Or is the joke like, haha, Taylor Swift is like romantically unsuccessful? Like, I feel like, you know, don't make fun of your female friends for sleeping around in the same way that dudes do. But if it's like, you know, for instance, I might make fun of a boomer for being divorced 5 times. That's not about promiscuity, but that's about like their inability to, you know, find a good partner, stuff like that. And so like, which, what do you have a sense of like what side that joke was on?
But it sounds like too, the joke, I mean, it wasn't about Taylor Swift. It's a character making fun of her mom using the reference of a celebrity who for better or worse is known to have had a lot of boyfriends.
Yeah.
So it is a lazy type of contemporary humor, which is, and someone put this on Twitter a long time ago. I'm sorry to not like credit them, but they did this little graph that was like contemporary humor, 2 overlapping circles. And it's like one cultural reference, another cultural reference. In the middle, we have joke.
Yeah.
So it's lazy. It's not like a good joke, but
I also think the other thing is, and this is also, I think, from some kind of tweet, and sorry to the original author, but the other tricky thing is, it's not that like there's a, I think, an idea going around that fictional characters need to be like standard bearers of like morality, like capital M morality, which like isn't true. Maybe the purpose was to have the daughter say an insensitive, hurtful thing that is problematic in a lot of ways, but like that was the show writer's intent. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe the show writer was like, haha, Taylor Swift slut joke funny or something like that. And so I don't know. So I don't think Taylor Swift has forfeited her right to be mad at stuff. At the same time, there is a certain irony to like bully these people. Not that she's saying this, but like having her fans bullying people who were not involved in the writing of the joke, such as the actress who said it, to be like, you're an awful person. I think there's so many levels of fucked upness in what's happening.
Yeah, I'm just kind of out on this one. I think that like, sadly, for better or worse, like that's what contemporary humor has become in TV shows and like adult animated shows. It's just a barrage of pop culture references. Sadly for her, I guess Taylor Swift is one of the most famous people on the planet. And her personal life is also known about kind of in the same way. A very lazy joke made in a lot of things is like any joke about Leonardo DiCaprio. You know, he hasn't dated anyone older than a college student or whatever it might be. There's just like, you know, it's a thing that happens. And obviously we live in a misogynist culture, so joking about Leonardo DiCaprio is different than joking about Taylor Swift. But I don't know. It's like, it's a dumb joke. Things like that are said a lot about a lot of people in the public eye. Taylor Swift has infinity dollars. Until she brought this to light, I had never heard of the show. I imagine a lot of people had never heard of the show until she brought it to light. And now the fact that like a young woman is getting attacked by Taylor Swift's fans to defend another woman, like it's clear here that the motivation isn't let's defend women from patriarchal culture. It's we are zealots for Taylor and we will dance in your blood if you desecrate her spirit. Yeah. And I just think it's like a weird version of stan culture. And I also think it's just like, I don't know, like, okay, for example, sometimes, especially after like certain wisecrack videos, I'll get a random tweet from someone with 1 follower and no user image that says something really mean to me. Now, what I normally do is think these are funny and I just don't respond. But if I then retweet that and say, what a horrible person, then a bunch of people are seeing this thing, then the thing is getting attention. I realize it sounds like I'm comparing myself to Taylor Swift. That's not
you're
what I'm
exactly
doing.
But
I'm
just like saying, Taylor like, Swift.
Listen, as well, we're the same height.
You're the same
so
height.
So I think I have that in common. We're the same height. We both play guitar.
You were in a public feud with Kanye West.
I was in a public feud with Kanye West. And I have also, I dated John Mayer when I was very young.
Yeah.
Same sex, John. Safe sex, John Mayer.
Yes. Safe sex, John Mayer. Love that reference. I'm glad. Shouts to anyone listening who gets the reference. But well, I know you don't, Alec, and I'm not going to tell you. I like that Serbia and I get a thing that you don't get. It's fun. But I don't know. I do think this is overblown. And I also say that getting that I'm just like a dude and maybe there's some irony in me not taking it seriously. But I think the thing is a little overblown. And I think if you have infinity dollars, sometimes just like enjoy your infinity dollars.
I feel like I'm have a hard time believing that this is the worst joke or the worst thing that somebody has said about Taylor Swift, that she needed to be
it's
like,
definitely
you know what?
Not.
Fuck this. This is deeply sexist. Like
Kanye West had a song where he talked about like fucking her And that was a whole thing. That was maybe not nice, even though she then, there was a call where she said on the phone with Kim that it was okay. But.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like also, I hate to do this about like, I hate people, someone's like, this bad thing happened to me and I'm a woman. And they're like, obviously you're doing it for the publicity. That's bad. However, is it like Taylor Swift, especially with the Kanye thing, maybe has a history of being mad at things for publicity purposes?
Yeah. Well, also too, Taylor Swift's in this period of her career where I think like everyone's moved past the weird Kanye beef. She's put out two really great records during the pandemic that have highlighted her artistry and made it very clear that she truly is like a fantastic musician. It's just sort of like, now that you're at that point in your career, I just think it's dumb to engage in this type of shit. Because you know what? Like, there's a lot of famous singers, songwriters, and artists and filmmakers that people talk shit about on the internet or on Netflix shows that no one's going to watch after 2 weeks. At a certain point, you got to let that go. And I think there's a line. I don't know exactly where the line is, but like, if you are a public figure, people are going to continue to make dumb jokes about you in stand-up and dumb comedy shows and in their tweets. And at a certain point, I just don't know how worth it is to engage with those sort of things.
So, Serby, do you think she's given up her right to be mad at that seems to be both of your takes. I don't think it's my take, but
I don't think she has given up her right, but I agree with Burns that I think she should. I think she's at that point in her career where this should not be the hill she's going to die on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to quote her friend Kanye West on this one, there's a line, I forget what song, it's from the Graduation album where he says, yeah, I think he could, but I don't think he should.
Right.
And I think that logic is here. Could Taylor Swift reasonably get mad at this and make a public thing? Sure. Do I think she should? Nah.
I think it's irresponsible of her too. Like, she knows how passionate her fan base is. What did she expect was going to happen? Like, they're going to attack the show, like the actors and stuff like that. Like, how irresponsible.
An actor who, like, let's say this, Netflix doesn't pay a lot, everyone. I'll just say that. Netflix screws their actors over more than anyone else. Open secret. So some young actor, maybe this is her first big gig, who got paid shit to be in the show, is now getting attacked by people because she read a line she was paid to say because it was her job and she was doing it.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's just, I think that's shitty.
The last thing I'll say is the amazing Twitter comedian who pretended to be the author, the creator of Emily in Paris, is now doing this with that show. And it's just like, yes. Yeah, I wrote that joke. Taylor, you got a problem. And I hope she ends up on BBC about
she got so many, she's been posting like DMs of Taylor Swift fans who are like, fucking kill yourself. I also love that too. These people that are like, defend Taylor by telling strangers to like die.
Yeah.
Just no one ever be a fan of anything. I think that's the main thing. Yeah, like, just like things, but just don't really be a fan of people.
Listen, I'll say it about all my passions. They will all disappoint me someday. And they probably suck in some way, and that's okay.
Listen, I love Bruce Springsteen's music. He made a stupid Super Bowl commercial, and I can deal with that because I'm not obsessed with the person. I appreciate the art that he makes. Speaking of appreciating people, we appreciate you, and we appreciate when you call us. We appreciate when you email us. It means a lot to us. I truly have – I want to write back to emails a lot, but I still don't know if I'm allowed
You're
to.
You're allowed to. What the fuck?
Friends and fans. Okay, so I just learned this. I often want to write back to an email and be like, oh, that's a good question. That's blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, am I allowed to? I don't know. You know, our HR department never walked me through that in my onboarding process. So so now I can write back and call back. I'll call you too. Leave your numbers. Don't leave your numbers. But you can email us at culturebinge@wisecrack.co. No M. culturebinge@wisecrack.co and call us at 213-534-8807. That is 213-534-8807. We love it. It means a lot to us. We consider you a part of the community, part of the family. And if you don't talk to us, we're just talking to a void like a bunch of dummies. So, Alec, what do we got this time?
The first one, we've got a voicemail. Can we play that?
Hi, this message is in regards to your last Culture Binge. My name is Ariel, and I just want to say I am from Nevada, Michael, and the way you said Nevada made me cringe so hard. It's Nevada. It's very important to Nevadans to say Nevada, and Serby got it right. So I'm very happy Serby got it right. But, yeah, it's interesting about this company town thing that Steve Sisolak is promoting. It seems that it would be in areas that are technically outside already established areas where people live. They technically new areas, but I do agree it's concerning. It does remind me of company towns, and I can't say I'm completely signing on, but I can't agree. It's not a crazy Republican who's running this state. It seems to suck is a Democrat, so all kind of strange. But all right, thanks, and you guys do a great show. Bye.
Thank you, Ariel.
I'm sorry. So it's Nevada.
I'm never going to remember it. Like, I'm going to forget.
Can I just say this in my defense? I was raised and educated primarily east of the Mississippi. The West has been another country to me my whole life. I had not been to the West until I was an adult. I'm learning, and I thank you in teaching me these things.
Just call California or some weird shit.
No, I just call it Cali.
Cali. Oh.
I know. If I really talked like that, I would want to, never mind, I almost said something violent. I would not like myself if I was someone who talked like that.
All right. So that's the last voicemail, but we also have some great emails. I think we have time for two. The first one is from Ben about vaccines. It's our favorite topic.
What up, Ben?
Specifically, what is the morality of getting a vaccine in certain circumstances? I love to rack my brain about this, but this is from Ben. Hi, I live in Maryland. I have a medical condition that puts me in CDC's special prioritization group 1C, but Maryland, for whatever reason, put me in group 2. Maryland is also behind in its rollout and seems to have stalled at the moment in 1C. Would it be wrong to lie about my category since I should belong in category 1C and skip in line in Maryland or go to DC where I lie about my residence and get my shot there? I am a transplant recipient and the fatality rate for people like me is 1 in 5. There is even a good opinion piece on CNN from a transplant recipient who got her shot sooner just because of her job. I feel like it'd be okay since Maryland screwed up, but I feel like jumping in line could just be reinforcing my privilege as a white upper class male who has a job that can telework for the foreseeable future, and I could be jumping in line in front of more vulnerable people who don't have that luxury. However, at the same time, my wife works in schools and I will return soon, and I have an infant starting daycare soon that would expose me to it. I'm torn. What do you think? Thanks, Ben.
How are you putting this on us, Ben?
I want to preface this by saying legally, I don't think I can encourage you to do a fraud, but I will just say, like, on the ethics of breaking crime from a philosophical standpoint, I think you're fine. Here's the thing. And like, there are people in my life with similar things. Like, I think lots of people will make excuses about why they should have a vaccine, and I think most of them don't. I don't think you're one of those people. I think some people are like, oh, well, I'm a perfectly healthy 25-year-old, but I really want to do this, like, non-essential travel, and therefore, like, I'll get it. So I'm going to lie and say I work, you know, at my friend's restaurant. But you're not one of those people. Like, you seemingly have, like, a huge chance of dying from coronavirus. You're probably... Like, listen, there is a broad range of sort of health statuses among people who are 65 or over 75. You're probably better off than some 75-year-olds, but worse off than other 75-year-olds. And so, you know, when the state, the government makes these things, they're sort of imperfect categories. I think we should do our best to abide by them. But I think for people in severe circumstances like you, I don't think I'm going to sit around and be like, did you hear about Ben who's got a liver transplant and, you know, decided to skip in line? Like, I don't think it's that. I mean, the other case I know is, I know a couple of people who are at risk and have shitty state rollouts and so traveled state lines and maybe they didn't ask right questions. I know in another state, it was like you needed 2 comorbidities. So having cancer wasn't enough. You need to like have cancer and smoke. So maybe people fudge those things. I'm not mad at those people. I'm mad at the people who are like, you know, I don't need this, but I'm going to get it. And also at the same time, I think people are legally eligible. People who work at hospitals, but maybe work from home. And I don't think they're bad people. I think they are not going to sit around and let vaccines go to waste. So I'm saying like lots of eligible people are getting it who are probably a lot lower risk than you, and they shouldn't even feel bad about it if they're legally allowed to do so. So I don't think you should feel bad about it.
If I heard this story, I would not be mad at you if you got the vaccine.
Yeah.
I think that's a good way to put it. Yeah. I think if I had a friend in your situation and they did it, I wouldn't judge them. I probably wouldn't do it, but I have issues with feeling like anything I do is hurting others. It's a problem. I'll bring it up with my therapist. but I think, like, you know, there's the people who are literally scamming their way in. And there's a thing that happened in LA recently where there's been these codes that were meant for people of color and vulnerable communities at a certain testing site. And then a bunch of, like, white bougie people started texting the codes around and being like, no, it's like a FEMA testing site. Let's go get tested. And those people, I think, could, like, go swim in the ocean with bricks for shoes and I wouldn't care. I think in your case, Ben, you know, I think that's reasonable. And I think, like Alec kind of pointed out, the blame for a lot of this is on the people and responsible for the rollout at a systematic level and not at the individuals caught in a difficult system. So just don't tell us what you do, because I don't want to have that on my conscience.
Yeah.
Just be safe.
I also think if you feel like guilty about, like, you know, you work from home but are exposed in these ways, you know, help other people. I don't know how you would help them. And again, I cannot legally recommend any kind of fraud, but just, like, you know, you got yours, help other people get theirs.
Yeah, like kiss lonely people on the mouth.
Yeah, that's how the just antibodies trans. No, don't do that.
Yeah. You say, I'm a vaccinated kisser. Feeling lonely? Let me come over and kiss your mouth. Of mouth kissing?
So my best friend, the one who's ready to date again, she randomly got called in to get her vaccine. I don't know if it was like a glitch in the system or what happened, but she struggled with it a lot. And then her sister, who's a physician, just encouraged her to get it because they needed to just get the vaccines done. So she went and got it. But because she's young, healthy, and vaccinated now, and she felt super guilty, she's now going to volunteer at either vaccine sites or food pantries and things like that to help people. Oh. So there are ways that you could offset your guilt and use your vaccine for good.
Get this person a Raya account, everyone. Look at this. This is a person who gets their vaccine and says, you know what? I am now going to take this responsibility on and do something for others. Get this person on Raya. Let's get them hooked up with some celebs. If we get her the Raya thing, she'll have to tell us the stories anonymously. Everyone wins.
Yeah. I'm all about feeling deeply uncomfortable with ourselves as a way to force ourselves to be better people. Like, I think we should all just feel bad that we're monsters and then go from there, you know?
Like it. Was there another email?
Yeah,
good luck, Ben.
Yeah, good luck, Ben.
One more email. This one is from Adam. The question's directed at Michael, but Adam said, whoever, it's open for everyone. I am a college student studying to become a social studies teacher. However, I've recently been thinking about pursuing teaching college. I'm currently working on my bachelor's degree, and I know at most universities, professors are required to have a PhD, which means more time spent in school and more student debt. I'm also a non-traditional age student, and I'm set to graduate with my bachelor's at the age of 32, so time is sort of a commodity for me. My question is, getting a PhD worth it, and is academia all that great? It looks like a lot of work getting there, but also seems like a lot of fun. I know I want to teach. However, at times I'm unsure if I truly want to pursue secondary education. On the flip side, most of my professors aren't the most approachable and sway to the pretentious side. I feel like they wouldn't be the greatest coworkers. Meanwhile, I know so many primary and secondary teachers, and they're cool as hell. Every time I ask a professor for advice, I get a half-assed answer. Michael, with your experience in academia, do you have any thoughts or advice? Michael, you're going to have the good answer, but can I give my short, less informed answer first? I was very interested in becoming a professor to teach, especially earlier. It's still appealing to me, but as I understand it, Michael, please verify this, you are mostly stuck publishing or perishing, and the teaching part kind of sucks. Michael, what do you think?
If what you want to do is be a teacher, I would recommend maybe finding a way that you could get a master's in education that's paid for by someone else, not you, whether it's through a teacher training program or something like that, and look into like middle school or high school teaching. Here's the deal. If you graduate with a BA at 32, you'll probably finish your PhD, assuming you get in your first time applying, and you might not. You might have to apply for a few years, might have to move someplace you don't want to move to, might get a stipend that's really low. So you're going to take out some loans on top of that, so you can just like live a lifestyle that's appropriate to a person in their mid-30s. Finish your PhD by about 40, and then in your 40s, you will be competing for jobs, a lot of them being visiting jobs, where if you beat out the other 300 applicants, you might have the privilege of a two-year contract where you make $45,000 to $50,000 a year, probably with health benefits, definitely no 401k or anything like that, putting you in a position then where you are hoping by your mid-40s you get a tenure track job where you maybe start at like $60,000, $65,000, potentially moving to a part of the country you don't want to live in, but knowing that's your only option, in a situation where you increasingly have to teach more. And while teaching more, there could be, like Alec pointed out, a pressure to publish, even if you have nothing to say, even if your whole motive is, I just want to teach, I want to help people, I want to be around young students, which is fucking a rad motivation, you might be pressured to write things that you don't even need to write, that the world doesn't need, because maybe you write a few good papers or one good book and you're psyched with that for a little bit. It's a really rough game, and a lot of cards are stacked against you. And I would say, if the motivation is to teach, then I would consider ways you can do that outside of having to get a PhD. And also too, I will try to remember to email you, but please, if you hear this, feel free to email again with any further questions. I'm happy to talk to you about this.
So what about if you were to get a master's and try to teach at a community college, assuming that he's based in the U.S.?
Even then, if you get a master's degree, your best bet with a community college is they let you do some adjunct courses. So you're getting between $1,800 and $2,400 to teach a course. Community college jobs are about as competitive as four-year universities at this point. So with a master's degree, you know, if there's a community college job that goes up, they're going to get hundreds of applicants with PhHDs.
Yeah.
So you're still going to be kind of in a shit out of luck position in a lot of cases.
Yeah. I know a person who teaches, they've got a career, they're a researcher, but they teach a public health class at their alma mater. In the first couple of years, I think they were pretty psyched about it. It doesn't pay a lot, but they have a full-time job. It's not their financial stability. And I think, you know, after the third year of just teaching this one class, it became a grind, which isn't to say that it would become a grind for you, but I think kind of like the master's thing of like maybe find ways to sort of like kind of like teach on the side if you really want to. Like I would personally love to do that, even though I know it's a horrible career, but like I have a job. I think it would be cool to teach on the side.
Yeah, if you have a master's degree and you live in a place where you have access to a few different institutions, many of which aren't like, you know, tier one, you could probably get in there and like teach a class if that's just like what you want to do. But I don't know. I just think if you're interested in teaching a subject that is taught at high schools or middle schools or whatever, I would just go that route. Remembering too that the pay at a lot of public middle schools and high schools is just as much as you would get starting out at university. And in a lot of cases, you still get pretty good benefits and have some strong unions in certain places to look out for you. But yeah.
And I suppose if you were to teach like junior year or like senior year students, especially like in advanced courses, then wouldn't they be just as engaged as like college students? At least that was my experience.
I think just as engaged. And the problem with college students in a lot of cases is they're like overworked already. They're, you know, and this isn't bad, I don't morally judge them for this, but they're like partying a lot, doing other stuff. It just might not be a priority. I think that I know I have friends that teach at the middle school and high school level that have a lot of positive things to say about it. So but we should probably wrap up here. We've gone for a little bit. So thank you so much for all these calls and questions. We want more of them. So culturebinge@wisecrack.co for the email, 213-534-8807 for the phone. And also just shout out to everyone who, after our last episode, joined that Hi-Ho beta and that we've been able to talk to on that app. That's been fun. So do that as well if you want to talk to us there. Before we end, if you do want to bug us in a way that doesn't involve email or text, you can find us on the internet or at home. Serby, what's your internet home? Where can they find you?
Serby Patel 22 on Twitter.
Alec, where can people find you? Whether it's an apartment in New York or a Twitter at, where would they
find you? You can find me maskless in the park making out with strangers or on Twitter at wisecrackalec.
Ew. I'm Michael O. Burns on the good old social medias. And we will be back in 2 weeks. So we will see you, hear from you then. We'll probably be streaming live that time too, which is really exciting. So catch us then and have a great March.
Bye.
Bye.